Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy.
Hello, everybody. You got Kathy Love jumping into your ears, but we've also got Dave Jerob, founding director of Move About. Welcome, welcome.
Hi, Kathy. It is such an honour to be with Aussie OT royalty today.
Oh, I don't know if that makes me feel old, which I am. So I think this is what happens when you've just been around for a long time. I've got a memorable name as well. So I'm so excited and to have you and to hear a little bit more about your story. So whilst I've known of you for many, many years, I don't know you well personally, which is just going to be my excitement. So tell us, like, just paint us a picture. What's Move About all about?
What's Move About all about? Yeah, look, Kath and I worked in the States. Kath's from the States. So Kath is my beautiful wife. She's also an OT. We come from a very OT family.
Some people
might know of Jen, who was also an OT, my sister. But, yeah, Kath and I were in the States for 5 years and we moved back to Australia. And
when was that? When was that about?
It's about 16 years ago. You know, we felt like babies. I only had about 5 years' experience and we weren't sure that we wanted to set up our own thing yet. Actually, we didn't want to set up our own thing. There was one person we wanted to work with and she was sort of a friend. And when we chatted to her, we mentioned that we might want to open our own thing one day, you know, maybe in 5 or 10 years' time. And she said, oh, that probably wouldn't feel good to me. Maybe we don't go ahead with it. Now, I think if we said we wanted to do it in a year, she'd probably take us if she could get a year. It's so hard to find OTs. But so we ended up working with some other people and for a little bit, and just it wasn't a good values fit. It was, if there's a story there, I think that is a pretty defining story, actually. Are you okay if I share that?
Yeah, go for it. Yep.
Yeah, it was. There were two occasions where I was doing an intake call, and with your typical mums of the kids that we see, that you know, both kids had autism, and so these mums, I was chatting away to them and just giving them ideas and strategies, talking about sensation and talking about relationship and talking about all these things, and sort of 20-minute calls. And the guy I was chatting to, the guy I was working with, said to me, "Look, it's too long. You got to just, you know, do enough to get them in and talk to them on their dollar." And I was like, that did not really sit right with me. Fast forward to, you know, 6 months was basically all we could take. And then we decided to set up our own thing. But fast forward 6 weeks later, 6 weeks later for one of the parents and 8 weeks later for the other one, they turn up and they come to therapy. And so, right, 40 minutes for two clients. I actually think that's not bad business. Except the cool thing was both of those mums referred three other people to me before they'd even got in themselves.
Yeah.
Right. So 40 minutes got us eight clients. If you want to be tough on like do the business and strategy, but like the thing is we just realized that, you know, do good work and people will come. Live your vision and your values. By all means, know your numbers. You should know your numbers. That's the way you do it. But live your vision and values. And so we set up Move About and we've really gone ahead with that. We did think it would just be us originally, and that changed within another 6 months. And so, yeah, we just want to create a place.
2008.
And 6 months later, we'd hired someone. A year later, we'd expanded. 4 years later, we expanded again. But we just wanted to have a place that we could love what we do and surround ourselves with people who love what they do and just do good work and make a difference in the lives of kids and families. And so we've always had the motto. We've always had the approach, but in the last sort of 5 years, we've put it into a phrase, which is we support the people who support the kids. And that really is our organizing principle. And that's our families, our team, and also our community.
Yeah. Yeah. So back to 2008, and you're these emerging business owners with a very clear entrepreneurial spirit. What did you think business was going to be like?
Yeah, we thought it was going to be just the two of us. Me first, because Kath went back to uni.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did work at a really great place in Chicago. So it was amazing. It was a multi-disc team. Beth, our employer, was on faculty with Iqdal at that stage and then also Perfectum. But it was just a really rich learning environment. And we had supervision every week. We had group case studies, one lunchtime every week.
Beautiful facilities.
Probably beautiful facilities.
Service models over there from what I've seen,
I will say that 15, 16 years ago, there was not a lot like it here at that stage. I think there are places like it now. I think there really are. And it was amazing. And then we sort of got here and it was just me, you know, and it was quite lonely. And I suddenly was meant to be the expert and have all the answers, which was terrifying, right? Because I didn't. So, you know, Kath and I were very on the same page about this. We wanted to do the best work. So, you know, I was spending $600 a month on mentoring back then, which is probably like $1,500, maybe $2,000 a month these days. Yeah. It was a lot. I got two OTs, a psychology and a speech therapy mentoring session because I missed the leadership in that previous team.
What an investment, though. Yeah. Like, that's what it takes.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And that's what I try and share, I think, with some of the younger OTs that I'm supporting and we're mentoring too when they come through the Move About Mentoring. When I'm chatting to people and they're like, oh, we don't have support. And it's like, well, that's cool. You know, you can find out your CIA. What can you can control? What can you influence? What do you need to accept? Yep. So if you can control it, get them to change it. You probably can't, but you could influence it. Maybe you can get some. Maybe you can get together and have a study group with the other OTs. But if you accept it, then what can you control? You can get some yourself, right? Particularly if you got this job and your boss is like stressed out paying the bills. And so they think the way they have to cut back on costs is by not providing support because they're paying you seven grades above the award, what you should be or what they think you should be. If you like your job, but there's not that great support, get it yourself. I mean, that is what will save you too from burnout is being good at what you do.
Yeah. Yeah, there is certainly a time when you've got to invest in yourself above and beyond whatever the organization may be saying or promising. It's interesting, the bit about the mentoring. When I was working as a clinician, my mentors weren't actually OTs. For quite some time, they were often psychiatrists or pediatricians or speech pathologists or psychologists. Or I used to go and find people who I would work with for X number of months for really specific knowledge, but so often out of discipline.
Absolutely. And it's funny, when I was in Chicago, the mental health professionals drove me batty. I love them. And I love them doing their job, but then it was always like you'd have these discussions and I'd be like, you know, sometimes the kid likes the song London Bridge is Falling Down and it's not like symbolic of, you know, Freud said sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. But then I got back to Australia and I'm like, oh, my God, London Bridge is falling down. I don't know what to do with this mental health piece when I'm all on my own. And so, I had to get mental health support.
Yeah.
Because there were, at that stage there weren't OTs in pediatrics that I had access to here that I felt were helping with that. You know, I had great people that I could access back there. And speech is the same thing. If you're not pitching your language at the right level, it sometimes makes it really hard to do OT.
Yeah, absolutely. So 2008, Move About kind of put the shingle up and had a few years there. Share the story about Sensibility and shifting to the Central Coast a few years later, or 8 years later. How did that happen?
Yeah, well, again, I have to rewind just a little bit.
Rewind.
Kath and I, our first you know, our first baby was Move About, and we put off kids for a long time for Move About. So, you know, it was a big sacrifice of long days, hard work. And we got to that stage after about 5 or 6 years that we weren't working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And I was like, oh, we could breathe. And so, of course, now that we can breathe, there's a knock on the door. Well, there's actually a phone call from the front office saying, hey, there's a guy in the waiting room wanting to chat to you. And it was a guy had come in and he was setting up a super clinic in Blacktown. He was a developer, but he was setting up one of these. Do you remember Julia Gillard had the super clinics?
Yeah. And he said, oh, it did blue. Like, what was that?
It's a fizzle, didn't it? But he said, you know, I'm really impressed with what you guys are doing. I want to chat to you guys about running the pediatric floor. We're building this 4 or 5 story building next to this other building with a medical center. We want you to run the pediatric floor. We want you to get in the speech and psychs and fill out the rooms. We'll give you $110,000-$120,000 worth of fit out. And we're like, oh my God, this is a dream, right? That's so much. And so
Was it a dream?
No, it wasn't a dream. No. And when we thought about it, it actually was a potential nightmare. But he was wonderful. Yeah. And we took 2 or 3 weeks off work. We just said, guys, we really need to think about this, because we'd sort of filled up the team. It was a good, solid team. And we went away and spent a couple of weeks. We started with sometimes you think you ought to do a trigger warning for this stuff. We started with, what do we want on our tombstone? What do we want our legacy to be, right? And then worked our way back. Because just because it's a good deal doesn't mean you should take it.
Correct.
And it was really good offer, but it just was going to take a lot. We would have had to have it, had at least another 4 or 5 OTs pretty quickly without losing anyone. And we were really honestly ready to have kids. And we went, thanks, but no thanks. I think we'll let it pass. You know, it can be a good offer and not the right time for us. So we put a lot of work into thinking, what would it look like? What could it look like? How would we want it to run? And we sort of treated it a lot like, if we followed through, what would it look like? And so we did all this work. And then we got pregnant with our eldest. And a year later, fast forward a year later, we've got like a 3-month-old. And on LinkedIn, Coralie Clifford, this amazing, another OT royalty in Australia, owner of Sensibility on Central Coast, reached out to me and said, hey, Dave, I'm wondering if, you know, I know you're from, as a colleague from the courses, could I give you a call about something? And then she called up and just basically said, you know, I'm heading to retirement. And I think she'd been practicing for 40 years or something. She's amazing. And she said, I really want someone I can trust to take over my practice and continue on what we've created.
Yeah.
And support the families, support staff and all that sort of stuff. Will you consider it? And so Kath and I jumped in, you know, well, we said, yeah, we'll consider it. And we sort of delayed it for a while and like, can we really think about this? And then she followed us up and went, all right, let's go meet with her. And so we jumped in the car and went to the Central Coast, and we're driving into to visit her at her house in Glenning Valley. It was a beautiful house. And, you know, we're driving down and we're close to the beach, but this is a really beautiful area with trees and very nature. And someone's watering their garden and waving to us as we drive past. There's a lemonade. Yeah, there was a kid with a lemonade stall. We're like, this is staged. What a setup. And we met with them and they showed us the place and they showed us around the Central Coast. And we just went, you know what? I think the time's right. I think we should try. We've never lived by the beach. Kathy lived like in the middle of the USA, like so far from the beach in Wisconsin. I grew up in Richmond, which is nowhere near the beach. And let's move to the beach. And we did. And we chatted to her and her amazing daughter, Sally, was the practice manager, and she's still our practice manager. So it's been 7 years that she's been with Move About just last week, I think, and 7 years we've been – it became Sensibility. We took over Sensibility and then we changed it to Move About. But, yeah, that's the story of how we got there. And, yeah, I think Kath and I, we sort of feel like we're unofficial members of the Clifford family as well now. And it's nice. It's nice that we've been able to continue the great work that Coralie did.
Yeah. And then later – and more recently, you set the sat-nav for Warners Bay.
Yeah. So that's a cool story too. I think we've had a lot of journeys as a business thinking about how we're going to run things. You know, there's all the people stressing out about it, recruitment and retention and all this stuff. And we decided that, look, there's one pathway that's typical in a pediatric practice for a therapist. You're a newbie, you're an intermediate, you're a team leader, you're a manager, you're an owner. If someone's ahead of you on the run, you've got to wait your turn or you've got to go somewhere. I'm sure we lost stacks and stacks of people because we had that one pathway. Here's the pathway. And so we decided we wanted to create pathways. We wanted to talk about pathways. And so we had this big discussion with our team at one of our team retreats about what are all the potential pathways. We've got this amazing screenshot of this whiteboard with like 50 pathways we came up with, you know, and we openly talked about there's a family pathway. You know, people take a break and have kids and then they come back. And that led to us putting in maternity leave. I wanted to openly talk about a travel pathway. I think we lost people because they were going to go traveling for a few months. We've got a therapist leaving us at the end of the year for some traveling. And another therapist has told us they're traveling next September. So the therapist leaving in November was going to go for a year, but now she's worked out that she's going to come back by September to take over the caseload for the therapist who's leaving in September. And so that's really cool that now we're talking about pathways. We call it entrepreneurship, that the team look after the business. Yeah. Getting back to your question, it's really a ownership pathway. So Kim is one of my favorite humans in the world. She worked for us for 6 years at our Bella Vista practice from a new grad, and then needed to get out of her shoebox apartment in Parramatta and leave the city. And she moved to Newcastle. And so we lost her. But then we, a couple of years later, opened up Central Coast, and then she had a baby, and I invited her to come back and be a team leader at the Central Coast practice and then a manager. And so we've had about 11 years out of the last 14 or 15 together with Kim. And a year ago, I was like, oh, her daughter was going to kindergarten in 2023. And I just openly said to her, you're probably not going to want to travel an hour each way to get to work when she's in kindy, are you? And she said, probably not. I said, what do you think if we do something together? Because I really didn't want more than two, that if I lost the manager, I had to jump in and do it on my own, you know, or that we had to do it on our own. So I said to her, well, how would you like to do it? So that then she could be the key person at that Warner's Bay clinic.
Fantastic. You've used one of my all-time favorite words, intrapreneurship. And I don't hear it very often, and it's a principle that I absolutely love, and we apply it in our own business as well. And a surprising number of our NACA consulting team have got a side hustle, or some of our suppliers have come in as team and then gone out as suppliers and built their own businesses and the like as well. What does it mean to you, though?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think starting from entrepreneur, Kath and I are the entrepreneurs. We took all the risk. We still take all the risk. Yeah. And if there's some profit, we get some of the profit. And so that's the entrepreneur. For us, an entrepreneur is someone that treats the business like their own. Right. We've always had people that are very passionate about what we do at Move About, and we have a really strong culture, a really caring team that has each other's back. And if I'm honest, there was a time that I used to say, if you want to be the best, come work for us. If you want to get paid the best, you've got to go somewhere else. And we sort of openly talked about that because we had the best support, the best resources. We really invested in that stuff, that there's not a whole lot left over for pay. But I just, at one stage, I just looked at the team. I went, that sucks. Because you are the best. I bring my own kids to you guys. Let's talk about this. Can we pay the best, support the best? Can we support the best, have the best resources and pay the best?
Yep.
How is that possible? How do we compete with other people? And there's one way, and that's to have the best run business where we don't lose people. I think there's another story there in terms of adding up the dollars of what it costs to lose and replace someone. But I think we have really good ability to keep amazing people, and we have people that are really invested in the clinic. And so we call those entrepreneurs, and we ended up coming up with an entrepreneurship agreement that people sort of chatted to each other and they took responsibility and they do things to grow the practice. So after a year, we actually do that with them, and then they become part of a profit sharing framework as well. So we share about 20% of our profits with our team. So we'll never pay the highest base salary. But I believe after a year, people can earn the most with us through KPI bonuses and entrepreneurship bonuses and other things as well.
Hey there. Okay, it's time for a breather. Did you know about our Allied Health Biz Quiz? This is not just any quiz. It's a roadmap to growth, tailored specifically for Allied Health business owners like you. Hundreds of business owners have taken our free quiz and received their own customized report. And if you have already, kudos to you. We hope you found it useful. But if you haven't yet, our free quiz takes less than 6 minutes to complete. It asks a series of questions based on our tried and trusted business accelerators. Think of the Allied Health Biz Quiz as a tool to measure where you're at, what's working, and how to build on what you already have. This quiz isn't about pointing out what's wrong with your business. It's about setting standards, measuring progress, and uncovering areas for improvement. Complete the Allied Health Biz Quiz today. You'll receive your own detailed customized report loaded with practical suggestions to help you get the best business brilliance outcomes. You can find the link in the show notes or on our website at naker.com.au. And now it's back to the conversation.
Running a business isn't just about setting up shop and becoming complacent. It's about showing up for ourselves and our clients with a commitment to continuous improvement. We have to be honest with ourselves about where we're at and where we're going. That means identifying strengths and weaknesses so we can improve. After all, if we're remaining stagnant, how can we scale and build the business and life of our dreams? That's where the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz comes in. We're not talking horoscopes and horoscope here. This questionnaire is the perfect starting point for you to begin identifying your strengths, needs, and blind spots as an allied health business owner. The process is simple. Answer the 14 questions and we'll send you a personalized report that includes actionable steps for you to start taking your business to the next level. Ready to take your business into your own hands? Take the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz today.
It's not unusual for me to be in conversation with allied health business owners who have a huge amount of fear that their employees, that their clinicians are going to take all the IP and take the referrers and take the clients and waltz off into the sunset and set up their own business. Mm. What do you reckon?
Yeah, been there. Well, you know what? I've not particularly worried about that with my team members, to be honest. But I have been quite protective of what we have from other businesses. You know, had this scarcity of we're going to be the best and have the best support so that people want to work for us and not for them and that competitive thing. Yeah. And something clicked with that too. You know, COVID was a lot of good came from the thinking time and the disorganization before reorganization of that whole process. And you know, we just made a decision. We're going to move from scarcity to this infinite game concept because we did a few things. We really worked with our team around getting absolute clarity in the wording of our vision and our mission and getting absolute clarity in our values. And like, I just had to be honest with myself. If I want a world where all kids, regardless of their differences, can have meaningful lives and be valued and valuable members of their community, I can't do it alone. And I can't do it just with my team and just our caseloads. And I can't, you know, I'm never going to have this monopoly over the whole world that I can control the world and help all kids. I need to help people at other practices. I need to support the people who support the kids who will never work for me if I want that vision. And, you know, it's funny that the once you let go of that, it's contagious and people want to work with you and you just, it feels right. And it was sort of back to the roots, right? Back to that initial story I told you where it's like, you know your numbers, but know your vision and values. That's what's going to lead to success as well.
It's sort of sounding very much about the law of attraction as well.
I guess. My sisters are really into the law of attraction, so I have this little bit of a twist on the law of attraction thing. But it is, you're right, it's an abundant mindset, right? Yeah. But it's not even about, like, it's just, it's this being service-focused. It's just wanting to, it's meaning. It's very OT, right? It's meaningful occupation. Loving what you do and that's rooted within our values. We want to make a difference. We make a difference. We're in it to make a difference. We're always learning. We're connection driven and we're playful and we live those and we remind each other of those. And you know what? I love going to work and our team love going to work. I've had people say they get sick and they have to have a few days off working. Like, I'm so glad to be back. So cool to be at a place where people love to be there.
Yeah. Let's bounce from that into early career burnout.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sort of the flip side, but it's something that I'm sure we're both, well, I know I'm certainly seeing it and hearing it as well. So I guess setting the context is that many graduates coming through last year and this year have had that COVID impact on their undergrad experience as well. And they may be coming into a range of businesses that have variable support and investment in them as well. What do you think's going on across the industry for these early career clinicians?
I have a few thoughts that I haven't heard spoken about.
All right, you're going to speak about them?
I'm going to speak about them. Yeah, I you know, a lot of people are talking about toxic workplaces and big case, and those things are real in a lot of places. There are gross places. What I do say to people is, actually, you have amazing control. You know, there's short supply of OTs and high demand, so you actually have control. So there's no point sort of complaining about that. Just find a better job. And there's ways to do it. And we can actually talk. One thing I think people need to invest in themselves a little bit. You know, you have 4 years of uni where you earn nothing and you live on like a shoestring or whatever they say. And then you get to work. And I say to people, take a week off before you go for a job hunt and go ask to observe at 5 or 10 different practices. Like, invest in yourself and make sure that you're not moving from one crap job to another crap job. But so, yeah, there's toxic workplaces, there's big caseloads, and caseloads are different to KPIs. I try and help people understand that too. So we mostly treat hourly, weekly. So if you've got 23 as a new grad, that's 23 kids in your head. If you're doing half hour fortnightly, you've got 92 kids in your head and 92 reports and 92 lots of paperwork. So knowing that difference between caseloads and KPIs is different. And for business owners to know that when they're talking too, that they're not saying the same thing just because they say 23 KPIs is or 24 or 25 or whatever it is. But and a lot of people like to talk about, oh, you got to fill your cup. You know, it's all about filling your cup and taking care of yourself. And I don't mean to, I do get into this voice. I've got to figure out how to kick that voice when I say it, because it really bugs me, I guess, because in my brain, I think their brains are actually hearing your cup's empty, your cup's empty, your cup's empty.
Or broken.
Or broken, yeah.
What would you even know? Yep.
When I go into a session with a half a cup, and the parents got an empty cup and the kids got an empty cup, you know, if I go in with a heart of service, this idea of compassion fatigue hasn't been something I've seen a lot in me or my team, because you go in and you come out and you've all got full cups at the end of it because we love what we do. I don't think that compassion fatigue or the actual work with the client is the thing. And actually, Sonia Beselich is an amazing speech therapist and entrepreneur. She doesn't even like this idea of full cup. She calls it a fulfilled cup. Go have a fulfilled cup. Be happy with what you're doing. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I like that. So I think two things happen, right? I think admin is a killer, and so people burn out of the admin. And then that also goes along with we've got a whole generation of perfectionists coming through, right? So to get into OT, you've got to score really well. We've got these super smart, conscientious, amazing, big-hearted OTs graduating, and they want to have a huge impact. And then they get into the work. They've never failed at anything often, a lot of the time, the highest grades, they've always been great. And then you get in the workforce and it's bloody hard.
Yeah.
It's hard and you're not great. You know, and I say that to my team members, I'm like, actually, you're not great. Great is the top 5%. Masters are the top 1%. You can't possibly, and you shouldn't be expected to be. And you don't need to be, because here's the thing. If you've got great support and you've got good resources, you can still do great therapy. And yep. So we can talk about how to get those for you. You don't have to be great to do great therapy. But so that perfectionism piece, and that, I don't know if you've ever, Seth Godin is a marketing guru, and he has a very short book called The Dip. And I read that as an hour and a half listen on Audible, actually. And I had just been looking at the conscious competence matrix. And my brain just put these two things together. So, and this is something that I think I see two specific times that people hit a wall in their early career. So you start your career and it's new and exciting, right? You're in this unconscious incompetence. You don't know what you don't know. And then you realize, oh my God, there is so much I don't know, right? And so that's an early burnout breaking point.
And just that questioning of, well, what on earth have I been learning in the last 4 years?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think a lot of people are taught, oh, look, if it feels hard, if it doesn't feel good, if you don't love it, maybe it's not for you. You should try something else. And I've just done 4 years and it feels hard and they're taught to find something else. But so it's new and exciting. You don't know what you don't know. Then you realize how much you don't know. You hear this conscious incompetence, and that's really hard. So you do. They need a lot of support to get through that, and they need to know that there is support there and connection and a whole bunch of different things. And then you get conscious competence, and so that's when you know what you need to know. And I see that as actually a really another key point where people burn out, because you have this idea that once you know what you need to do, it's going to feel easy, right? Except when you know it, but you still have to think about it, It's exhausting. So they're like, now I know it, but I'm still exhausted at the end of the day. I still feel like I have an empty cup. And so that's another point where they break out, where they drop out. And it's not until you get to that sense of unconscious competence where you can do some of your job without thinking about every step that you start to feel alive and then get to that reflective competence. And those two zones are where you feel flow, and that's when it's energizing. When you're good at what you do, it's energizing. I'd much rather see 6 kids in a day than be doing paperwork, to be honest. But yeah, that's energizing. And I think it's really hard when you have to think about it, and it's hard to be for something to be hard. But once you get through that, it's exciting.
Yeah. There's quite a bit of talk also around the place about resilience as well, and what that looks like and what different people need at different times, and where on earth do allied health businesses find that, and particularly if the allied health business owner themselves is not feeling particularly energized or focused or resilient as well. What are your thoughts on resilience?
I mean, it goes along with it, and I do think that I think sometimes I'm going to be honest and say that's a cop-out from the business owner's perspective. I think we haven't been innovative and worked out how to, like, this is the hand we're dealt, right?
Yep.
We've got these amazing humans that want to change the world, but they don't know how to fail and pick themselves up. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a fragility there sometimes, but there's also a real strength. And so if this is the game we're in. You want to own a business, you need to be able to support the people who support the kids, right? And although one thing I made a big shift in is that supporting the people who support the kids is not taking care of people. It's not babying people and making it easy. We had this amazing, amazing, amazing story where we had a group, and the hardest part actually for a lot of our therapists is when they hit 19 or 20 clients. 23 onwards is fine because you're used to your kids, it's the same kids and that sort of piece, but they were sort of a bit overwhelmed. And we just moved Soph, who's an amazing therapist, had been with me for 5 years on the Central Coast. She moved into the manager role at a Bella Vista practice. And we had an intensives coming up, and she'd started for a few weeks and then went away for 5 weeks, which had been planned for 12 months, but we wanted them to have some time with her. They hadn't had a manager for a little while besides me. And so then I came in, I'm like, all right, let's do a great job for Sophie while we're away. So we filled them up for intensives, and they were quite a lot fuller than they would normally expect, because we normally would ask them to see 24 plus an assessment a fortnight, 24 a week plus assessment a fortnight, but there's no assessment. So it's like, let's see about 27 kids. We're seeing intensives. We've got kids coming in 5 days. So you're really only seeing like 10 different kids. There's less case management. And so they were a little bit sort of starstruck by that and a bit worried, but they had groups going and other things. And they smashed it and they loved it and they looked so good, so alive. These kids were making changes within 1 week. They were able to work together in these groups and connect and feel part of something. And I looked at them on the Friday of the second week, and I'm just like looking at them laughing and chatting, and I'm like, you guys kicked some serious goals. You looked amazing. And the penny dropped, right? Previously, I had been trying to make life as easy as possible and handling with kid gloves, and instead I moved to, this is hard and you can do it, which is a phrase I got from Colleen Hacker from the Sensory Gym. She was my third year placement supervisor, and I've kept it with me. This is hard and you can do it. And they did it, right? And then they could feel it in themselves. I did it.
Yep.
I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, I don't even know what the question was.
The question was about resilience. I think they have it within them. I think that it's until you fail that you know what you're capable of. You know, I failed more than most people have tried, and I try and tell my team, fail lots. You can always repair, fail fast and learn, fall seven, rise eight. But they have permission to fail and move about, and there's no shame. There's no, we don't pick on people. We have their back, and we repair when things go wrong, and we move forward, and it's our job. I guess that's the end of the story, is that's the business that we're in, and the business is supporting people to be strong, great humans.
Yeah. Change the world one session at a time. So you've currently got a team of 25 OTs and 6 customer service experts. What does your team do beautifully?
That's a good question. I mean, they do so much beautifully. I think they connect beautifully. I think they care beautifully. I think my favorite thing that I hear again and again from families is families will often say, I just think it's amazing that when I arrive, every team member, every single team member knows my child and greets us by name, right? So we do relationship really well. We are connection driven, and we really care, and we really focus on supporting the people and supporting the kids. We really are very focused on helping the families and the teachers and people help kids in their life. So we do have this great sensory space, and people who don't have what we are pick on us and say, oh, they're the sensory clinic. But no, we're bottom to top. Our goals are super functional. Our treatment is education, consultation, and direct treatment. So the direct treatment is part of the puzzle, and we like to have the parent in there as part of that, because the goal of OT is not to be good at OT. The goal is to be good at life. Actually, I just did a post on Instagram this week that said, we are not mechanics, right? We don't fix kids. People don't drop off their kids to be fixed. We support them to be successful and happy in their everyday life. So connection, relationship, and supporting families, I think, are what we do best. And supporting each other, having each other's back. If someone hears something in a session, people will pop their head in and say, hey, you need a hand.
Yeah. What would your team say about you?
My team, the positive things or the negative things, Kathy?
Well, you can choose. You can self-select.
I think my team would say, I know that they all appreciate the way Kathy and I run Move About, and that we practice supporting people who support the kids, that we have their back 100%. I think they would also say Dave is like, you know, chasing every shiny object, and it's very hard to nail him down to get a sentence out sometimes. So that is something that I do work on, is that I do have a lot of things on my mind. And so I try and meet with people with nothing else open or on, or because I'm undiagnosed, but I sort of hate when people do this, but I truly would have no problems getting an ADHD diagnosis. And I've created a life that supports that I don't need to get that, and a great team that supports that. But yeah, I think that's probably I have trouble staying on task and I go on tangents. You might have felt a bit of that today, Kath.
All good. Like the 25 tabs that we both closed down to get some bandwidth.
Correct.
Where is Move About likely to be heading in the next couple of years? Don't need to, you know, share all the secrets, but what have you kind of got in mind?
I mean, I have no problem sharing secrets. I have no problems. I'm happy to help anyone who's running a business and just give away what I have. I just want kids to have great lives. So, and cream rises, by the way.
Yeah. Gabby,
so it's no threat to me. I don't know. I have a really strong group in my team. We decided we needed to really mark anniversaries. And so at our last retreat, we caught up and I gave 7 watches, because the watch, I don't know, these fancy watches that everyone wanted were for 5 years with Move About. And so that was really cool. We've got more now since then. So, you know, I'm excited to see where the team takes it. Like, I have so many things on my someday maybe list that now with entrepreneurship, I have some really amazing minds that work for me that want to take things in different directions. So we've got a group that's working on our Supportive Steps program, which is, how do we support people who are stuck on a waiting list? How do we give them activities and videos and ways to help them? We're looking for a program for people who can't afford services, on a path towards, I think, one day maybe having a not-for-profit element. We have a lot of team members who are interested in in populations that don't have all the resources that we have as well. Parents, we want to do more stuff with parents to be able to support them, to support their kids. So, and we've got a lot of therapists who've been with us for a while that if they said, hey, I want to set up a move about, I'd really consider that. It's not in my plan, but it fits within our vision of helping more people. If they're going to take the lead, I certainly will support them.
Yeah. So good to hear your story and your passion. Just absolutely amazing. You've got the last couple of minutes. What would you like allied health business owners to be thinking about?
Look, I think that, and it's probably getting annoying for the people listening, but really we need to support the people who support the kids, and that's our employees, and it's also employers. And so you need to put on your oxygen mask first. And so you need to have support. You know, humans are social beings. Social connection is important. And, you know, I still get mentoring. I get business mentoring. Me and too. I get therapy-related, you know, clinical mentoring. So we need support. So find that for yourself. And there are people who do it for free. There's people who are charged. There's, you know, there's a range of different people. So, you know, we've got Move About Mentoring, which is primarily targeting people whose businesses are unable or unwilling to provide them with support. And so that starts at $87 plus GST for new grads whose businesses won't pay for it. We've got a Move About Immersion where people can come spend a week with us, and each of the day of the week they meet with a different person and talk through a different part of the client journey, understand from intake through assessment, through treatment planning, goal setting and discharge. They get in about 15 sessions and an assessment. We have a play with equipment session, and we send them away with a whole bunch of resources. So we're doing some things. There's things out there, and there's other people out there, and there's a lot of business coaches and mentors and different frameworks. But find that support, because that will sustain you. When you feel like you're not on your own, you can do good work. And even business owners, I think one of my saving graces was a group of amazing women in the Newcastle area who invited me to be part of their wine and wine group during COVID. And that were my saving grace, you know, just knowing there are people out there. You know, a lot of people talk about the bad stuff of business owners, but business owners, man, they take on a lot of risk, and it's a scary thing because we get into it because we're good at our craft, not because we're necessarily good at business. And so not a lot of people understand what business owners go through. So I encourage those business owners, find people like you and find that community. Community connection is key to everything for me, and finding support to help you with what you're doing, but also support just to have someone walk you on the same path. I think that's my key.
Love it, love it, love it. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing the adventure so far.
Thank you for inviting me, Kathy. It's long-time listener, first-time caller or something.
Yes, something like that. And our paths just crossed in the freakiest of ways a couple of months ago. So, yay, I've loved listening to all that's done, and exciting, hey? Exciting. We're lucky to do what we do, I think.
I think we're in exciting times, and I think we are. Yeah, I think we are very lucky to do what I do, and I think that's where this idea of really I want to end OT burnout, because the idea of occupational therapists
burning out,
not finding their occupation meaningful, blows my mind, and it doesn't need to happen. So, yeah, let's work together to make sure that there's great OTs around to help kids for a long time.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.